for rock solid football action.
Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought all the people that I knew who didn't drink were self-righteous people, holier than thou. So it never occurred to me that Alcoholics Anonymous was filled with people who had drank like I did, and now were the same people that I used to drink with. The same people that I liked, only now they weren't drinking. They were people just like me who had been drinking for a long time and found out that it didn't work for them anymore.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app to find a meeting near you.
Well, hey there, everybody. It's time now for When We Wake. I'm your host, Andrew Shaver, and on today's program, I got a wake-up call. I said there'd be one coming up, and I'm a man of my word. My guest today is Toronto singer-songwriter Kyle Stevens. Kyle's new album, Everything's On Your Mind, arrives June 19th, and in many ways, it's a homestead record. The songs were written at his kitchen table while he was transforming a small downtown backyard into his personal urban oasis, and they were recorded live off the floor in a friend's home with his pals spread out in rooms on every level. We talk about that community-minded approach to making music, the freedom of letting go of control in the studio, and the 15-year journey behind one of the album's centerpieces, This Is My Nightmare. That's not my nightmare, that's the name of the tune. Along the way, Kyle also shares stories from his work as an environmental educator and wilderness guide, reflects on the influence of Fred Neil and Richie Havens, and explains why the most important part of songwriting is simply showing up, whether inspiration arrives or not. Here's my wake-up call with Kyle Stevens. There we go.
There we go. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Kyle. Right on. You're on your back deck somewhere?
I am, of course. I'm in my little oasis in the city.
Is that right?
Yeah, I've got a little vegetable garden, and we moved into a messy backyard, but the landlord said I could do whatever I want, so now I've turned it into a whole little homestead project of mine deep in the city.
Get out of here. Excellent.
It's my little oasis.
Have you done something like that before? Like when you moved in, were you like, this is obviously what I need to do? Or did the idea arrive?
It was like when I first moved in, I did like a bucket of one vegetable and saw how it went. And then the next year, the next door neighbor moved and they gave me a garden box. And I was like, okay, cool. Now I've got a box I can try.
Cool.
And then I crammed too much into it. And then I went, okay, I'll space it out better next year. And now I like scour the neighborhood and find pallets and pull them apart and make
wow
for my yard. Yeah,
excellent. What was the very first vegetable you planted? You said you did one
cucumbers.
Cukes, right on.
Yeah, easy. They're viney, they're pretty. Yeah,
they're viney and pretty. Okay. Yeah. Now talk to me like I'm a six-year-old when it comes to this. They're viney and pretty, do they flower?
A little bit at the end of the year, kind of, or spring. Okay. I don't know. I don't really remember. I think they have some kind of early, but
okay.
Shows how much I know. As I said, hobbyist.
Well, sure. I mean, look, you stuck with it though for 3 years, and now you have a quote oasis that
you are
surrounded by that you grew. Terrific.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey man, don't. Doesn't the opening song on this new album of yours, I believe it's Come Around.
Yeah.
Don't you say no one gets it right the first time, or am I paraphrasing?
Exactly. No, that's exactly what I said.
Okay, it takes a little time, but you get there.
Yeah, exactly.
Right
yeah.
on, man. Right on. So you're talking about an oasis in the city of Toronto. That's home?
Yeah. I'm downtown Toronto. I'm in the West End. I've been living here for about 10 years.
Okay.
But I grew up in the GTA, but I bounced around going to school in Waterloo, going to school in Sudbury, working all over the province and traveling. But feels like home now.
Great.
Which is nice.
Did it start to feel like home in the last 3 years? And then I guess what I'm asking is it coinciding with this oasis that you've grown?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think I just settled into a point when I hit my 30s and moved out here to this, the West End, and started doing this where I realized that I just wanted to do the things that made sense to me do them for myself. And you know what? Not every vegetable is going to be great. Not every song is going to be great, but I might as well keep working on them. And
yeah, man.
Just kind of went with that. And then next thing you know, you got another batch of songs. Right?
There you go. You got an Oasis and a whole new album.
Yeah, exactly.
So what were you doing before that? You said, you know, if this was a shift into that mentality, where were you prior to that?
Before doing this record, it was finishing up the last one and just kind of freeing up some space. So after finishing Considering Every Change and doing the little bit of promo I did for that, that was a huge learning curve, right? First project, a lot of goosebumps, getting all that out of the way, getting all the cringe off your chest and the fear of, oh no, will people like me? And then just going, you know what, I want to actually do what I want to perform and sing and that kind of stuff. And I put out a couple random singles to just clear out the closet of older stuff that I had. And when we moved to this house, started working on this new record. And
well, that's cool.
So I wrote it all at my kitchen table, and then we took it to my buddy's Jack's house and recorded it all at his house. And then we took it to my buddy Nathan's house and mixed it all at his house.
Love
so it was
that.
Very much a like homestead album.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Which was different from the Considering Every Change, which was your debut full length album.
Yep.
That was something that you recorded at, remind me his name, Jonas Bonetta's?
Yeah. Jonas Bonetta.
Right.
Out at Port William Sound.
Port William, that's what it is.
He's got a beautiful studio out in the country. He's got about an acre of land out there.
Lovely.
And it's really close to my wife's family cottage. And that's why I worked with him, because I was just like, you know what? I'd always loved evening hymns.
Great band.
And getting to work in a part of Ontario that I loved and doing the idyllic, like it was my first record. I wanted to play everything myself.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to like be really in control of like every lick, you know?
Yeah.
But that's a great pivot to this record where like,
no kidding.
The change was, all I did was sing lead vocals and acoustic guitar live in the room with my buddies. And we took a long time picking who, and it took a long time to schedule. And then we just busted it out really fast. So that was a really fun pivot from the like idyllic working in the country with one buddy and obsessing over every little detail.
Yeah, sure.
To doing this like commute from my place to my buddy's house, see all my friends there, have coffees, hang out all day, like nine of us in the studio. I'd show them the songs in the morning and we'd record them in the afternoon.
Wow, man.
And then the song was done.
What, no overdubs on this album?
We did the vocal harmonies.
Sure.
Jill and Meg are a dub.
Yeah.
And there's a couple songs with Shakers and Congas. Those are overdubbed by my friend Ryan McDonald.
Quite a stark difference between, as you said, between Considering Every Change, your debut, where you played everything, and Considered Every Change, I imagine, which I imagine the title came pretty organically out of that process.
Definitely.
To now an album where you recorded it live off the floor to tape in a house spread out across a few floors, at you know, a couple floors at least.
Yeah, so we had my buddy Nathan, who engineered this project.
Nathan Vanderweelen?
Yes, yeah, he's from the band Bart. He's an incredible engineer. He's done a lot of work in this city, and I've known him for a very long time, so it was great to finally get to have him fully on a project.
Yeah.
And he needed a place to keep all his gear, so he put it in my friend Jack Shooter's house. And Jack said, look, you can store all of this in my house because I live on like a cul-de-sac in the East End. It's quiet. But we're going to set it all up and record an album because Kyle's got like almost an album's worth of songs ready to go. So then I had to finish it up, and we just started working, the three of us, on planning it all out and then picking who we wanted to play what and picking the sessions.
I mean, I can understand wanting to try something entirely new on the second on the second album. What was it? You started to get into it at the beginning of our chat. What was it that made you feel like now I got to do it like this? Like what was the impetus?
After finishing the last record, when I went down to sit down to like do a serious batch of writing again, I was feeling like, okay, writing is the thing that from the last one I really want to focus on growing. I like to write very personally, which is a really hard thing to do without getting too sappy, you know? or like too melodramatic. It's a really hard way to write, I find, but it's also my favorite way to write. So you like, you really have to go through some BS to get to the good stuff, right?
Yeah,
and so right. I spent a lot of time reading and spent a lot of time reading and then spent more time reading and not writing at all. And then decided to just like treat songwriting like a bit of a journaling experience almost, where I was like, all right, 20 minutes every day, I'm going to sit down and just spew it out, you know? And maybe that's at 9:15 with my coffee in the morning at the piano, or maybe it's after dinner sitting on the couch, you know? But it was every day, it was a bit of an intentional, like, I'm just going to take a bit of time. And I wrote all of this album like in January last year, and we recorded it this time last year, and now it's coming out. So it was really fun to take a long time with the tediousness of the writing, and then take that, which I took so much time with going back to a lot of these songs and like fixing up little things here and there, and then going, okay, now that it's good, I'm just going to take it to my friends that I know are incredible at what they play, and I'm going to give them the songs, and we're just going to see what happens, because I know who I've chosen.
Oh, sorry, guys. I should have looked at you, right?
I just love how this song starts. This is Cal Stevens with Mother of Mercy. And you know, nothing says playing live off the floor with your buds like starting, stopping, laughing because you didn't look at them and count it in and just going again. Here it is. More of my chat with Cal Stevens after this.
He was waiting for me the first time that we met. I only wanted it for me, and I only need my bed. After school and at the bar, a final phantom threat, a mystery in history, a true story read. Mother of mercy, Father time, since midnight, who am I? As we battle on, right could still be wrong. Who am I to say? If I was a singer, and if I was for sale, if I was ignoble, and if I was in jail, it's something about a low life, stealing from a thief, trying to be a villain, trying to set yourself free. I've seen you get famous, and I saw you fall apart. Now watch as the endeavor hit every false start. Of all the reputations tarnished to the last, I wanted her to go to him, and I needed him to ask. Mother of mercy, Father time, could still be wrong. suspicious vintage ambiance, suspiciously contrived. Her instructions were to love her, and his response to love himself. And all they'd had to sacrifice was just a little bit of health. Certain cities and certain seasons, it's a wonder that you're here. A lifetime built on friendships and orchestrated fears. Mother and mercy, all the time, since the midnight, who am I? We battle on, battle on. I'll sing another pretty song. The thing that's right could still be wrong. Who am I to say? And I sit in a willow tree on the street lamplight. The time came, took a side, and you always knew that she was right. Through lecherous days and a mushroom haze, I was scrounging in the dark. And all that time spent looking for someone nice to part. Scraping at the bottom, the work is heaped with praise. I was caught in the malaise. That dirty, rotten scoundrel, no, it's not, was all he said. I only wish the best for him, and I only wish me dead. Mother of mercy, all the time. Thing that's right could still be wrong. Who am I to say?
That is all 7 minutes of Mother of Mercy from Kyle Stevens off his new album, Everything's on Fire. Kyle is my guest on today's episode of When We Wake. Now back to our chat. Did you guys roll on first listens and not first takes, because there's always going to be a first take, but like when you would play the song for the your assembled band?
Jack would try to get us to.
Uh-huh.
The quickest song that we recorded is Mother of Mercy, which is the closer of the record.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, we recorded that less than an hour after that I started writing the charts for the band.
Oh, wow.
Because there's only two parts, right? There's the verse and the chorus. So it was like, you guys are all good enough. If I show you this, even though it's a 7-minute song, there's only two parts. You learn the back and forth, and then
that's right.
We'll go. And so we just started kind of playing it, and everyone kind of was coming in. And then when we finished literally that, because the song's so long, they figured it out by the end of our first rehearsal. Jack downstairs just went, I should have recorded this.
Right.
So then we did two takes, and then we kept the second take. So.
And that was it, eh?
Yeah.
You did two takes, kept the second take, and there it is on the
album. Yeah, and then
sounds great.
Added the girls and added Ryan on the tambourine after, and then that's how it sounded. Every single one of those pedal steel licks is just Jason in that room that day, which is bonkers to me, you know?
But actually, paint me a picture of the setup in the house. Where is everybody? You're at the kitchen table.
Yeah, I'm in the kitchen. I've got some baffles around me. And we've got a big snake going into the basement from the kitchen where they're in the little studio room.
And a snake is the power.
Yeah, like a hunt. Yeah. All of the cables from all of the things that we have upstairs are just running into their basement. And then we've got the kit in the living room, the bass in the living room, a couple different vintage keyboards in the living room. And then cables running upstairs to the couple bedrooms upstairs to isolate the amps upstairs.
Wow.
There's a hilarious amount of bleed. We couldn't overdub anything, even if we wanted to, because it would just take the room out of it.
Right.
It kind of forced us to just commit to it.
Yeah.
Which was really fun when, like, I'm writing this personal album and then just, like, there's nothing to hide behind. Like, I can't studio trick it, which was kind of fun.
Was that a discovery that was made along the way?
No, I think like every time I record, I try to do that kind of earnest recording, capturing anyways, going, I don't like the philosophy of like, oh, we'll add something to it in the mix or whatever. You know, like I just want the guitar to sound that way, or I want the bass to sound the way that it sounds. So taking the time to be very specific in amps and microphones and angling things the way and setting people in the room, and then taking 14 minutes to record a song.
You're not afraid of a long song?
No, not at all. And that's cool. My wife's least favorite thing about my music is that I love a long song.
Well, except for the song about your wife.
Yeah, that's the short one, right? Yep. I did that on purpose. That's thank you for catching one. That.
Renee says, yeah. Renee says no more than 3 minutes on this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Wow. Yeah. Cause you know, there's, as you say, there's like 5, 6, 7 minute songs. And I like that.
And I did that with all the singles.
Right.
The first single was 5 minutes. The second one is 6 minutes. And then Mother of Mercy will be the song that's coming out on the release day.
And that's 7+.
And that's 7, yeah. And then This Is My Nightmare is my longest song ever.
How long is This Is My Nightmare?
That
why?
One's
why?
Over 9
why is
minutes,
that song over
which
nine
is
minutes?
Really fun.
I'm not being combative. I'm just wondering why that song's over 9 minutes for you.
Yeah, okay. So that one's one that I've battled with for a long time, and I'm really glad you singled that song out, because the first 5 minutes, so it's in 5 parts, right? And you can kind of hear most of them, I'm sure, if you just like went, that's probably a section, that's probably a section. And so the first 5 minutes, the dark, angry, brooding part, and then the almost samba bit, I wrote that when I was 19, and I've recorded a couple different versions of it. I recorded it with Jonas, just like by myself on my back on the deck at the cottage with a big boom mic over the lake to capture like the lake sound. Thought maybe a solo acoustic version would be cool. I recorded just the first 5 minutes with Daniel Romano when I was like 20. And it just never felt right. It never felt done. And I kept messing around with it and eventually had all these other like little things that were in that same tuning. And I just started realizing that they all kind of flowed together really nicely. I'm a sucker for Fairport and Pentangle and Burt Jansch. And I don't do a lot of that kind of stuff in my songwriting typically. So I was like, I'm just going to cram it all into this one song that's in this tuning that I love. And so next thing you know, I had all these parts and all the lyrics were flowing nicely. And so the second half of the song I kind of wrote a couple years ago, and it's this thing that's taken me 15 years. And then we recorded it like that's entirely live except the violin, which is nuts to me. When we got to the final part and I'm doing those falsettos, I was sitting there going, oh, please just don't let your voice crack on you now. You know, like everyone's nailed this. And when we finished the take, which was the third take of it, which felt like forever because it's such a long song, right?
Sure.
When we finished the take that ended up being the take, the whole band was like, oh, I didn't play a wrong note. I want to listen. I didn't play a wrong note. I want to listen. And they all ran downstairs.
Wow.
And I needed to take a minute in Jack's backyard because I was like, I've battled that song for 15 years. And all of a sudden, it's done. I just knew it without hearing it back. I was like, that feels like
you knew it was done.
Yeah.
Wow. So what was the feeling?
Oh, man. I just like, it was spring and I just sat there and took in the trees in Jack's backyard and was like, oh, it feels incredible to have wanted to complete that song for so long. And then to just like know that what we just played was it. That's a very special feeling in songwriting that you experience really rarely, and to have that with like all my friends in the house, it was really cool.
Well, look, we're obviously going to play the track in question. Here's This Is My Nightmare 1 through 5. More with Kyle Stevens after this.
I struggle to show the things that I know, for the thought of a defense is self. This guided me all through a dream, while those around stand by. Fall hard on your guard, defend who you are, though I still see relapse. Tell me, my friend, any answer at all. I don't care if it's a lie. Thank you.
out of sight. Now let him carry himself this time. And on and on it goes, settled in the evening glow. Another then another, then another, who wants to know? On and on and on you go. Another, then another, then another, who to know? Get lost in this, talk of this tomorrow. Better to leave it dust in the corner.
Stevens with This Is My Nightmare, number 1 through 5, off of his new album, Everything's on Fire. Kyle Stevens is my guest on today's episode of When We Wake. So you've been playing music for a long time, hey?
Yeah, just my whole life.
Just your whole life. When did it start for you?
My dad got me into music immediately as a little kid, and my Uncle John got me a guitar when I was like 8, 9, like a little silly plastic thing. And I immediately was, even on that, being like, can I play Heart of Gold? And like was trying made my dad take me to like a guitar shop for lessons with like my little plastic thing, because I was like, I want to do this. And they're like, you're tiny, why are you trying to play guitar?
Because your dad played?
My dad never played. He started playing after I did, because I was in high school playing all his favorite stuff, and he was like, well, I want to. So he just learned he did the classic 4-chord so I can sit around the campfire move.
Wow. Have you played with your dad? You must have sat around a campfire.
A million times. Yeah. You know? It's a bit of it's a father-son ritual. I go home, we'll play some Blue Rodeo. Neil Young together. You know, classic father-son stuff.
Yeah, a little Jim and Greg happening there between Kyle and Pops.
Yeah.
All right. That's cool, man. Okay, so you started playing really young. Then you got good quick, I'm guessing. And then what happened in high school? What or even junior high? I mean, you started when you were 8. I'm skipping elementary.
I didn't take music in school. I was always focused on visual art because my dad was a photographer and I really liked visual mediums and I liked painting. And then in school, I was a little hippie kid and I focused on my environmental stuff and went on to university in environmental studies and did work as like a field technician for a bunch of environmental engineering firms. And music was always just kind of the thing that I did to have fun with my buddies while I also did that stuff.
Right.
And I lived kind of this like dual life of having to get up at 6 a.m. for my adult job as a field tech, but then also want to be out with my buddies at the Cameron House till 4 in the morning, you know?
Well, of course. How long did that last?
A lot of years.
Good years, I'm guessing.
Definitely fun years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Good choices, bad choices, but you know, that's what I'm writing about on this album.
Well, sure. I think you're describing everybody's life, Kyle. Good choices, bad choices.
Yeah, exactly.
Not everybody's writing albums about it. Yeah. So are you still engaged in another profession other than songwriting? Are you still working in the environmental field?
Yeah, I've recently left the desk job life and I'm working as a wilderness guide and an environmental educator for a couple That's different cool. organizations here in Toronto, which is really fun.
So what does that have you doing daily?
Getting people excited about the environment around Toronto, doing educational hikes with kids or leading environmental cleanups on the shores of Lake Ontario from a kayak.
Excellent.
And I work for an organization where I get to take people on backpacking trips. I'm going on a trip this weekend. And I've got all my stuff.
Oh, wow. You're all packed.
Yeah.
There it is. It's on your porch. Yeah. Packed and ready to go.
Yeah, I did my whole like pre-trip pack today because I'm the guide. So I've got to be the one the most prepared, you know?
Well, yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, definitely.
Who are you taking kids? Is that what you said? Are you taking
No, this job this job is for an organization that gets like young adults, like 25 Great. To 45.
We're calling 45 still young adults.
Yeah, man. Hell yeah. Okay. I'm 35.
Okay,
I'm still
that.
Young.
Well, I know that. I'm north of 45, okay. So I guess I'm not young anymore.
You've just hit middle age.
I've just aged out. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, so it's like people like that that are just looking to get out of Toronto and don't have access to it. And I work for a company that that means that I get to take people that are keen to learn how to go camping, get to do it in Algonquin Park. It's really nice.
So you take them up to Algonquin?
Yeah.
And get in canoes?
Yeah. 2 nights in Algonquin.
Excellent.
Sometimes up to 5-6 nights.
That's amazing.
That's pretty cool.
How many trips are you going on?
This summer I'm going for at least 3 or 4 overnights, including one in September where we're doing the longest portage in Algonquin, and like I might be the only person in the world that's this excited for it. I'm amped.
What are you
amped? 5 kilometers of carrying a canoe on my back sounds great.
Okay, all right. I mean, look, I've portaged in Algonquin, not for 5 kilometers. I enjoyed moments of it. I can't say all of it.
No,
but what are you so amped about?
Type 2 fun.
Type 2. What does that mean? Type 2 fun.
It sucks at the time. You're suffering through it. You're doing what you can to get by, and then afterwards, you're like, oh, hell yeah! You know what?
Tree planting.
I've never done tree planting, but I bet I would have liked it.
I planted for years. That's type 2
yeah,
fun.
Definitely.
Yeah, for sure. That's cool, man. So you said at one point, I don't know if it's this organization or the other one, that is also like part of the MO is to get people excited about the natural or the sort of the environment around Toronto.
Yeah.
What are you excited about? Like, what are you excited to show people and teach people about?
I just think that Toronto's a very green city. And I don't know if people realize that, like we've got the Humber and the Dawn, and there's still trout that go up the Humber every year. And the Dawn has had eagles in it for the first time in like 60 years recently.
No kidding.
And like, if you cycle out to Tommy Thompson, you go to Toronto Islands, like you can do all this stuff from our city, which is really fun. And it's kind of hilarious that in the part of my life where I'm getting to leave the city the most that I have in years with all of this tripping is I'm realizing how much more I want to just do at home. And how much more I'm like, oh, on my day off, I want to take my buddy to do this thing. Cause like, there's so much to do in this city. I guess I'm just feeling, I've never felt this stoked for spring. Maybe that's just what it is. You know,
was it a long winter?
Oh yeah. 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 My dog got sick and I went through some pretty rough other stuff and
okay.
But she's doing great now. So
excellent.
Yeah. It's
excellent.
Been the darkest winter is leading to the most happy spring. And you know, this album's coming out right while it's all happening. So it's like,
yeah,
good timing for me.
What's your dog's name?
Her name's Pippin. The Hobbit.
Are you looking at her over your left shoulder right now?
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. That's fine. Does Pippin come on trips with you?
No, she's a little tiny Boston Terrier. She's a real city dog. Right. You know? She loves when I lay tarps out in the backyard, but I set up a tent and she's like, what the heck is that thing? Get it away from me.
Sure.
So, yeah, she's a bit of a city dog.
Here's a beautiful instrumental number off of Kyle Stevens' new album, Everything's on Fire. You can close your eyes and pretend you're in Algonquin Park or Kedgy or whatever your local provincial / national park happens to be. More of my chat with Kyle after this. About Fred Neil and the impact Fred Neil has had on your life.
Yeah. The first time I heard him was actually the Richie Havens live version of The Dolphins that was on like some Richie Havens greatest hit CD that I had.
Yeah.
And it was sick. It's just him strumming his guitar, another guy playing lead, and then a guy on bongo.
I mean, classic Richie Havens. Richie Havens strumming the way only Richie can strum. And
oh, yeah. Yeah. I met him once. His hand was like the size of a baseball glove.
That's incredible. Okay, we're going to put a footnote in that. I'd like to keep going with Fred Neil, and then we're coming back to Richie.
Absolutely. So like I heard that song and was just like, oh, cool. Environmentalism in music. And I was at the end of high school reading Rex Weiler's book about the foundation of Greenpeace. And I discovered that song and I was just like, okay, environmentalism and music all together. Mm. Look at this, all the stuff that I love, obviously Joni Mitchell, Big Yellow Taxi and all of that. And I was just wrapped up in how much I was already a sucker for music of that era. And then it's the era where there's a lot of activism in music. And I'm always drawn towards that. I'm drawn towards music from all over the world that's socially conscious in some way. And so with Fred Neil having that so heavily in his music and then devoting his life to environmentalism, I was like, okay, you can just do whatever you want, you know? And so I tried to follow that as much as I could.
Where did your activism bent come from? How did that get engendered in you?
I think genuinely just that time in my life, you know, I'm very impressionable. I'm 16, 17. Yeah. I'm listening to Bob Dylan and Fred Neil and Sam Cooke and Marvin Gaye, just being like, and like all of that soul, all of it has a message, you know, all of that soul music was talking about social justice. So much of the like folk music was talking about environmentalism or social justice. And I just got wrapped up in all of it and I fell in love with it. And I went to school for, I took political science because I just enjoyed studying the history and the interconnectivity of like all things.
Well, that's not cheesy. That sounds pretty awesome, man.
Yeah. Cause like I was studying environmental stuff, but I was doing it through a lens of looking at the world. So it was like, I was writing university papers on neoliberalism of water resources in Bolivia and like how their dictatorship had shaped the way that stuff happened. Mm. And like getting into stuff like that academically in like 2008, 2009. Mm. And then seeing the way the world has grown and changed after like such an intense thing to intense period of time of my life at that age. It's yeah. been really interesting yeah. to see where we've gone.
No kidding, man. Was there a time, was that, did that lead up to the time that, you know, in the fabled Kyle Stevens story where you walked away from music, was it that sort of that moment in your life?
I think it was, no, that was more, I just started getting so busy with the environmental work okay. that I was like, I just kind of needed to deprioritize something for a bit.
Okay.
And it was kind of nice to give myself the creative space.
Okay. Okay.
That's my excuse for not writing for like 7 years. I needed to give myself the creative space.
Sure. I mean, you know, whatever, you give yourself whatever you need.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It comes or it doesn't come.
It comes or it doesn't come.
Yeah. So for me, it's like I wrote Everything's on Fire and Abject Thoughts the same one. Like I was having my cup of coffee and I sat down at the piano and I wrote both of those right. songs. But then like the day before, I sat down for the same amount of time, if not longer, and I struggled away at two lines and I couldn't get past it.
So that's my question. You sit down regardless. When you when you set yourself to songwriting, you're sitting down
yeah,
and you're doing
that's
it.
Something that I really had the realization of, that I just enjoyed doing it. I should just do it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing that all artists have to just remember, because there is such a focus on being cool or doing the right thing sure. or making sure that you're doing whatever you know yeah. that stuff, and there's like a deprioritization of just like make your art with your friends right, you know right. And so I just was like, I like writing, so even if I write a really bad song today, at least I wrote something
right
today, you
right
know?
100%
it feels better than not writing. And if you like painting, just paint. If you like sculpting, just sculpt, you know, just do what your thing is.
You sit down to write now, and if it comes, it comes, and if it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah, and then you make little tinkers later, you know?
Right.
So, like, I busted both of those songs out that morning, and Abject Thoughts, I made a bunch of little tinkery changes to later, changing this, changing that reference,
right.
you know, changing the order of things, whereas Everything's on Fire, I wrote it, and I don't think I changed a single thing, and that was just, it was what it was.
That's cool, man. That's cool.
Yeah.
And then what happens? Everything's on fire. You write it. You don't change a thing. You get into the studio, quote unquote, the house. And
yeah.
You play it for the boys, or the gang. I'm not sure. The boys, girls, whatever. And then what happens? Does it change? Does it evolve? Grows? But what happens in that?
It's funny that we even led with that one as a single, because that was when. We had decided to make the record. Jack made me come over and he made me dinner and gave me a couple glasses of wine and made me just play him everything that I had.
Oh, cool.
That was ready to go. He was like, yeah. Just play me all of your songs and I'll tell you which ones I want to record.
You had not scratch recorded and sent him iPhone recordings?
No.
Excellent. Okay, cool.
No, I just sat at his table and played them for him and he like wrote down which ones he liked. And I had written those like a couple days before. And they're both pretty intense.
Yeah.
And
look, even people who haven't listened, just by the titles alone, could understand yeah. that maybe they're a little intense.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. And so I showed it to him, and he was like, "Okay, well, those are my two favorite ones." And I was like, "Well, those are the two I'm the most uncertain about.
Wow.
They're brand new. They're really intense. They're scary to me." And he's like, "Nope, we're gonna do those." And
what a good friend. That's what you need.
Yeah. Exactly. Like I said, hire your friends. Right.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, so he says, these two are my favorite. You go, oh, okay, I trust you.
Yeah. And it just, the intensity of the lyrics meant that we needed to record it very intensely, you know, and give it that thumping drive to it. And all of the energy that's there was like, I didn't tell the band to be that. They just got it from the way that I strummed it and the way that I sang
yeah.
it to play it for them and
sure.
the content. And like,
yeah,
you pick the right people and they're going to understand.
They're
you know?
Sensitive.
And these are all people
empathetic,
yeah.
you know, emotional
yeah,
human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah. artist.
They can hear that I'm pretty frustrated as I'm singing those lyrics, so they're gonna play along with it, right?
And they hit it where you wanted it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And like, shout out again to producer Jack Shooter. That guitar solo is just like live from the floor on that take.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it's incredible. He's a great player, and it was fun to not have to take guitar solos.
Yeah, man, that's excellent.
Yeah,
I don't take solos, but you have taken solos, but it was nice not to.
Yeah, it was nice to just strum and sing and smile at my friends.
Speaking of strumming, let's before I let you go here, Cal, tell me about meeting one of the greatest strummers of nice. All time, Richie Havens.
Good callback. Yeah. I saw him open for Buffy St. Marie at Massey Hall in 2008. Mm-hmm. And this is obviously way pre-Renos. And I went downstairs to the washroom during Buffy's set and met him in the like little bar that's what was in the basement. Yes. Behind their old washrooms.
Sure.
The one that had like all the old photos on it and stuff. It was a yep. real dungeon down there before.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like the one little kid in there, and I had hair down to here, and like wow. I clearly was the one young dude, and I was like, oh my god, that's the guy from the Woodstock documentary. Like, that's the guy that sings Freedom. There he is. Yeah. And so I just was like, and he like two-handed my hand, and like you could not see my hand at all. And then I was like, what's
went
your
up to your elbow?
Yeah. And he like told me about his tunings, and he was like, check out my website, man, I got all my tunings on my website. I was like,
you got this newfangled website.
Yeah, man. And he was like, big great. White beard, he's got 100 yeah. rings on his fingers.
Oh, wow,
he's wearing man. The robe, it, like his whole he was fully that. And he was just like, check out my website, my tunings are on it. And I was like, all right.
And did you checked
yeah,
his website
definitely.
Out?
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah. Uh-huh. Don't remember any of them, but
you don't remember the tunings? No,
no.
Okay, you didn't start, you know, trying to fiddle around with Richie Havens.
I didn't want to. Yeah, I'm not trying to. My thumb's not that big.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, hey.
He just
because
plays
it's coming
with his
over
thumb.
That's it. That's wild.
It's fully just
with his thumb.
Mm-hmm.
From over there's his left hand for the radio, his left his like basically his fret hand is you know is over top of the neck coming down mm-hmm. and fretting.
It's all in his crazy yeah. strumming. I love his strumming.
That's right.
So much.
No kidding, man. Mm-hmm. No kidding. Richie Havens, man, what a legend. What a legend. Kyle Stevens, this is very exciting. It's been great chatting. Everything's on your mind comes out Friday the 19th.
Friday the 19th. Yeah.
Well, look, you are packed and ready to go to Algonquin tomorrow. I wish you the best, and I'm excited for everyone to hear this terrific new album of yours. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks, man. And Andrew, thank you for all the support, and I love When We Wake Radio, and thank you, man.
Stop it. My goodness. Thank you, Kyle. We'll end today's episode with a quick little ditty off of Kyle Stevens' new album, Everything's on Fire. His wife, Renee, said, hey, keep it quick, Kyle. And he heeded her advice. This is the relatively brief, Renee Says.
Renee said what she wants and always what she needs. Who am I to pathologize the kind of honesty? Let's take off and say nothing at all. Free in simplicity. Who could ever ask for more than what given to me? And say about we just started letting it over us. And what
That's Kyle Stevens with Renee Says off of his new album, Everything's on Fire. Kyle was my guest on today's episode of When We Wake, and look, depending on when you're hearing it, that album is either already out or still forthcoming. June 19th, 2026, Kyle Stevens, Everything's on Fire, drops. If you want more information on Kyle, you can find him on Instagram. I love his handle, at Kyle Schmlevens. That's Kyle, K-Y-L-E. S-C-H-L-E-P-H-E-N-S, Kyle Schmlevens. I am all but certain, should have asked him, but pretty sure that is a reference to Harry Nilsson's 1971 seminal album, Nilsson Schmilsson. That's smart money on that, don't you think? Or kylestevens.ca, which is pretty basic, all things considered. I'm at The Andrew Shaver on Instagram. Our theme song is Got You by my pal and yours, Noah Reed. Thanks for listening.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new single by Sons of Rick called Fusion Frenzy, a high-energy garage rock track inspired by the classic original Xbox party game that brought the band closer together through late-night couch co-op chaos. The song delivers punchy riffs and catchy lyrics that stay lingering in your head as an earworm. A longtime fan favorite at live shows, Fusion Frenzy captures the band's edge while turning a shared inside joke into an anthem. Are you a local musician who would like to be highlighted next time on our airwaves and social media? Just complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Fusion Frenzy by Sons of Rick on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here right now with us on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Tonight. Fusion Frenzy!